There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Here we go then, it is The Agenda with you through until midday today. We're live from our brand new studios in the heart of Dubai Media City. But apart from a brand new home, nothing much has changed. We've still got the same team in studio with you, working through some of the big stories of the day. So be it local, be it regional, be it international, those new stories are being covered right here on Dubai Eye 103.8. We're encouraging you to have your say. This is your mid-morning phone-in on Dubai Eye 103.8. So do exactly that. Pick up the phone and give us a call. New number for you, 04871 5500 is the number there. Equally, if you would like to get in touch online, you can do so at Dubai I1038 FM, hashtag Dubai I1038, or drop us a text on 4001. The ARN News team are going to be here in numbers over the next hour and a half, and we've got the sports team joining us to talk all things Russia, all things FIFA World Cup, and other sports stories that coming your way a little later on in proceedings. It is Dubai I103.8. It is The Agenda with you through until midday.
Join the conversation, The Agenda, only on Dubai I103.8.
George Tolley still in studio with us, as she will be. Well, basically, I don't know if they've told you, but you've got to be here for the next week, if that's okay. Just sticking around, making sure that everything's going according to plan.
That sounds good.
You good with that?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that idea.
Georgia has the privilege of not only making sure that the Business Breakfast were up and running as the first show to broadcast from our new studio here, but also the second one in terms of the agenda. So thanks very much indeed for sticking around and being part of the paper review. And we've got Natasha as well. Natasha Thomas is the news desk editor down here at Dubai 103.8 and part of the ARN News team. Tash, thanks so much indeed to you.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah, how are you finding it? I mean, from on-air perspective, things are lovely. It's great to be in a new home. It is very sort of purpose-built in many ways. It's good to have everyone under one roof. Is it working for the news team as well?
It's fantastic. We actually moved in last week. We were the first team here, so we've been playing with the systems for almost a week now. And it's really good because we've got new systems in place for news, and the way we play out our news is going to be completely different from what we've been doing before. So there's been a lot of training going on, there's been a lot of learning, but it's all very exciting. It's nice.
Well, that's genius, yeah. Because you heard it here first, Georgia, that Tash is on top of it. She's been here for a week, so we are in good hands.
We can just relax.
Yeah, we can
kick
back.
That's the main thing. I'm going to relax. Nat's here.
Does it work, though, in terms of news sourcing as well? Because obviously before, we've had sort of news teams in different parts of the city and different cities, bringing all that talent under one roof. Does that complement?
Yes. I think the best part is that now we work with the Arabic team, with the Malayalam team, as well as the Shoma team, and all of us are in one group. Obviously, initially, we were all looking for spaces and basically blocking our desks. Once all that is settled, we are looking forward to working together with the team and, looking forward to the brainstorming sessions over the next couple of weeks.
And I suppose having a sort of central location and having everyone under one roof is also going to benefit you in terms of prospective interviews coming in. If Richard and the rest of the team have got someone coming in the Business Breakfast, then you can grab them as they're leaving the building, etc. But equally, if somebody's coming in on Virgin that is of a news angle, you could use them.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, with the Business Breakfast, we've been working closely with them for years now. But the fact that all the studios are in one row and we are right next to the studios means that we can basically stalk all the guests that are coming into the studios and go and grab news clips. Yeah.
In terms of moving forward, we're obviously going to hit up some of the big news stories that you and the rest of the team are following up in just a few moments' time. But in terms of moving forward, and one of the sort of mantras that we've put in place in recent years is trying to encourage as many of our listeners to be part of the ARN news team as well by getting involved via the app, by getting involved with reporting out there on the streets as and when they see these stories developing. That continues. That's got nothing to do with our change, our move of situation here.
Nothing changes. If anything, it'll be a lot more streamlined now with the new systems we have in place. But yeah, listeners can continue to get in touch with us as they used to. And we'll really excited about everything because it's just going to change the way we are producing our output.
And it's going to change, well, Georgia Tolley's daily outlook as well, because she finally gets a little bit of vitamin D of
a morning.
It's
going to change everything. I'm actually a bit warm. In the old studio, we were freezing cold because we were under the sort of depths. Well, it felt like we were under the depths. We're on the first floor, but it felt like a basement. Now there's this bright window behind me. Yeah. There are curtains. We discovered there's curtains, but that not for a minute would the Business Breakfast allow them to be closed. They're so overjoyed by the fact that they can see out into the real world. Somebody came in and tried to close the curtains, and Richard really got quite stressed out about it. It's like, no, we need the light. Don't take it away.
I've been hibernating in a cave for the last 8 years for you to open curtains at the first opportunity. Listen, talking of opportunities, another opportunity for you to have your say. Get in touch with the show now, 4001. We have got Natasha in studio. We've got Georgia in studio. We've got other friends of the station joining us a little later on in proceedings. But as always, we're encouraging you to have your say. Just a quick reminder of those numbers. Nothing really changes there. 4001, if you want to send us a text, you can get involved with the official handle, the official hashtag. But there is a brand new phone number, and given the fact that the agenda is your mid-morning phone-in, given the fact that we sort of rely on you giving us your opinions over the phone, this is fairly critical. So jot this one down, 04871 5500. I haven't had enough time to come up with a catchy little ditty that you will remember that number for instantly, but it is 04871 5500. Do have your say online. As I said, we'll be back with some of the big stories of the day, as brought to you by the ARN News team, George Tolley, and the rest of the crew down here on the agenda in just a few moments' time.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it on the agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Here we go. It is the agenda, broadcasting for the very first time from our brand new studios in Dubai. Media or Internet City? What are we calling it? Do we know as yet? Is it media? Is it Internet?
I'm saying media.
Let's say media. Yeah. Okay, we're going to go with media. It is a Sunday morning paper review. We are joined in the studio. Ordinarily, we introduce guests into the studio to work through some of the big stories that they've got, but given the fact that we are all under one roof and we're a big happy family together, we thought it's only right that we get Tash to come and join us, because she heads up the news desk editorial team for the ARN news team. She joins us live in studio, and we start with a story that you have been not just following recently and over the weekend, but for some time now. This is the ongoing astronaut program here in the UAE, and it's fascinating to me, Tash, that you know, in other parts of the world, we're seeing budgets being slashed with regards to space exploration. That doesn't seem to be the case here in the UAE. They've very much made a commitment to space exploration in so many different means.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is the Mohammed bin Rashid Center, Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center, and they made a number of announcements on Thursday about their space mission. And we basically got in touch with them to get some more insights as to what's going on. Now, the first main announcement which came out was the fact that its first flight will take off in April of next year. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, who's the Vice President and Prime Minister of the UAE and ruler of Dubai, called it a historic agreement, which is a deal signed with the Russian space agency, Roscosmos, in which a Soyuz rocket will carry the UAE astronaut on the mission to the International Space Station. And we got in touch with engineer Salim Almari, who's the Assistant Director General for Science and Technology at MBRSC. And he told us actually 20 women are in the mix to become the first UAE astronaut ever to be sent into space. He also told us a little more about this first step.
We obviously foresee that, you know, now we're going to have a short duration mission where we can really test out our capabilities in space and really learn, because it's our first process. And then going forward in the next years, we plan to have longer duration missions. So you're looking at going to the ISS for a 6 month duration stay.
Those are the thoughts of engineer Salim Almari. He's the Assistant Director General for Science and Technology at MBRSC, speaking to the team. Fascinating story there with regards to the investment into the astronaut program, but also the fact, this whole idea of transparency, and the fact that they're trying to get this mix between men and women, 20 women already in the mix, to become the first female UAE astronaut ever sent into space. How much more do we know about the space program itself and the trips they've got planned at present?
people apply, in terms of the number of people who applied, we know there are 4,000. There's a short list of 95 men and women between the ages of 23 and 48. The final four will undergo training for long-term missions on the ISS, which is an international collaboration between five bodies, including the US, Russia, Japan, Canada, and the European Space Agency, which represents 13 nations. And the intention is that these astronauts will carry out long-term scientific research lasting many months on the ISS. Now, the UAE's 10-day flight to the International Space Station will, as I said, be the first of many, many, many more missions to come. And they say they expect to stay for 6 months in subsequent trips. Now, here's Mr. Almari telling us why this is such a milestone for Arabs.
So the signature is a historic moment for the UAE, but also for the region, because this is the this will be the first Emirati astronaut, but it will also be the first Arab astronaut to go to the International Space Station. So I think that's quite a unique milestone.
Unique milestones. I mean, we use that phrase milestone time and time again. They seem to be setting themselves these milestones. It's also the time scale that they're setting themselves for these milestones. I understand that the first UA astronaut heading into space, we're talking about as soon as next April here.
Yes. Yes, very, very early. And, you know, he or she will be making history, not only for the country, but also for the region. And here's Mr. Almari telling us again how they will select this final candidate.
So we are going through medical and psychological testing of those candidates, and then we'll go through a deep interview process, and we'll end up with four. Those four will form our basically astronaut corps. So they'll be the astronaut team of the United Arab Emirates. And they're expected to obviously take multiple flights eventually throughout their careers to the ISS and beyond.
Interesting thoughts there from those that are heading up the space program here. George Tully in studio with us as well. I suppose one of the issues here, or one of the points that needs to be raised, is whilst this we're seeing more of an impetus into the space program and the initiative at the moment, it's nothing new. There have been aspirations for space travel from this part of the world for many years now.
Yeah, it all kicked off basically back in the 1970s with Sheikh Zayed bin Sultan, of course, the founding father of the UAE. Now, he held at least three meetings on space, and this is now, you know, nearly 50 years ago, including a memorable gathering in Abu Dhabi in February 1976 with three American astronauts. Now, they'd taken part in the historic link-up in orbit with a Soviet Soyuz craft a year previously. They obviously came to visit the UAE, and that meeting saw Sheikh Zayed presented with a model of the US space shuttle, which was then still five years away from its first flight. That was brokered by an American-Egyptian NASA scientist, Farouk Elbaz. That's actually how that meeting took place. Farouk Elbaz organised the meeting with Sheikh Zayed. Now, nearly 50 years later, but Dr. Elbaz was congratulating the current rulers by video link, and that was in May 2015 at the official launch of the UAE Space Agency. So you get this sense of this sort of the circular nature of history coming round, and it really quite extraordinary the strides that this country has taken in getting ahead of the space race.
That is the state of play with regards to here in the U.S. I suppose in terms of the conversation that's being had around the space program here is why such an impetus here in the UAE when, as I mentioned at the top of this little piece, there are other space programs in the world that are seeing their budget slashed at the moment as people sort of turn their back on space?
I think it's so important to remember that the race to space is not necessarily about going to the moon. It's about inspiring young people to get interested in things like chemistry and physics and maths and all those scientific subjects that might not seem as fun at school, but they are absolutely key in getting into orbit and creating extraordinary spacecraft and creating satellites, which is how you beam TV programs around the world. I mean, it really is at the basis of all these exciting opportunities. And so if you're not going to have a space program, then in a way, you're missing out on the inspirational opportunities for the young people in this country. And obviously, there's a huge campaign towards emiratization and getting children in this country to do serious degrees in things like maths and science. And one of the best ways to do that is to give them a figurehead, like an astronaut, to aspire to.
I suppose the other it not only brings about opportunities for careers and jobs, but I suppose also where we are living on a planet that is seeing its resources being used up left, right and centre at the moment in terms of fossil fuels, amongst others. The opportunity that space offers and gives to a nation, a global economy to a certain degree, is untapped as yet. And I suppose there is the opportunity that arises from that.
Yeah, and that's something which the UAE has already realized. You know, they launched the Emirates mission to Mars, which is the first by an Arab country to the planet, which will place a scientific mission in orbit by 2021. So the UAE understands the fact that space is very important for the reasons which Georgia outlined. But also scientifically, you can explore the outer realms of the universe. There's so much to learn from the universe, which hasn't been tapped into by a lot of countries. And the UAE understands that potential and therefore continues to invest in these programs.
Another little story about space, and who knows what those astronauts might find next April when they head up into the stratospheres, the outer spheres, and any other spheres you can think about at the moment. But who knows? They might bump into a pudding.
What?
Yeah, they might bump into a pudding.
What type of pudding?
A Bakewell pudding.
Why would they bump into a Bakewell
because
pudding?
Because St Anselm's Preparatory School in Derbyshire have come up with a rather unique way of honouring their local favourite pudding. Homemade pudding was launched into the stratosphere using a high-altitude balloon on Monday morning with tracking devices attached so that its position could be seen on a computer at all times. It was done successfully, and the ceremony didn't really have the sort of pomp and circumstance of a NASA event. The children were excited to watch their pudding go boldly where no
go on,
pudding had gone
it.
Before
Mayor,
or Bakewell
much.
Or whatever. It went and it achieved its heights. It went to 114,000 feet and then just kept going. And then the tracker went off. So somewhere out there at the moment, there is this...
Wait a second.
The Bakewell pudding.
No.
There's a bird eating the pudding somewhere.
No. A bird? What do you mean it went up into the orbit?
Oh, it went into the orbit,
alien. Yeah, okay. An alien has eaten its first Bakewell pudding. This is the first earthly pudding digestion by an alien. That's my theory.
It's up there.
Or it disintegrated.
The pictures are up there. They've shown those pictures going up there in bits and pieces. So who knows? It's just floating around innocently at the moment. It's our little offering to any other life form that might be out there. You know, it's a nice little offering. That's what you do, isn't it? When people move in next door on the street, you take around a pudding.
Pie.
A pie. So if anyone is hit by a Bakewell pudding and can't explain it, that might be the explanations. Talking of explanations, we'll have more for you in just a few moments' time. You're listening to The Agenda. If we're sounding a little bit clearer today, it's because we are broadcasting from our brand spanking new studios in the heart of Dubai Media City with great views over the city of Dubai. Broadcasting, however, across the UAE and, as always, encouraging you to have your say. You can text us now on 4001 with all the latest updates from out there on the streets of the UAE, on the road to the UAE, but equally what you've been up to over the weekend as well.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, well, get your thoughts in to us by texting them to us on 4001 if you'd like to get in touch with the show. That's probably the best way to do it this morning. You can give us a call on our new number, 0487155000. This is The Agenda, Sunday morning paper review, live in studio with me, Tom Urquhart, Georgia Tolley, and we've got Natasha Thomas, who's here with us representing and flying the flag for the ARN News team. She is the news desk editor there. It is great to have her on board this morning in our brand new studios, broadcasting first time from the studios for The Agenda, that is, on this Sunday morning. Let's turn attention to some. Just again, quickly, if you want to have your say on any of the stories that you're listening to this morning, get in touch with us and we will read out your thoughts momentarily. Let's go to the news desk now, though, who are in studio with us. Tasha's here to talk through some of the stories that the team are following up from. Just as a quick mention as well, if you'd like to stay on top of the news with all the team at Dubai I 103 Point at an ARN News Centre. Then the website, best place to start your usage there, DubaiI1038.com. Just tap on the news tab there. You get your local, you get your international, your business, your sports news, all there. Regular bulletins on all of our stations here. And of course, you can download the ARN News app and get updates for free. So there is no excuse, really, for you not to be involved when it comes to the news. Let's turn our attention, though, to another story that you are tracking at the moment. It comes out of the UAE. Authorities down in Abu Dhabi are giving... There was this video, wasn't there? It was a graphic video last week. I remember that we talked about it when I was doing some stuff with Dubai TV last week, and we debated long and hard whether this is an image, whether this was a video that we could broadcast. And there were negotiations and chats with authorities down in Abu Dhabi and saying, yeah, because we've also got to that point now that we need to shock some of our viewers.
Yes. So what the video does is, for those who haven't seen it, it shows an SUV running a red light and turning left. You can see the driver is completely oblivious to the fact that the lights have turned red. And moments later, a car coming from the opposite direction crashes into the SUV. And the reason this was shared by Abu Dhabi police was that they wanted the public's feedback. What more can they do to make the roads safer? They wanted suggestions from the public as to why these accidents keep happening and how can these be avoided. And since this particular video has been posted online, apparently they've received more than 25,000 responses from the public on social media. You know, they've responded by criticizing the motorist behavior. Some have presented a series of proposals and on how to reduce such incidents. But what I find interesting is that police are now, you know, they're interacting with residents. They've said, look, we've put all these systems in place. We've got really good cameras to catch motorists who do this. We've got the fines in place. But what else is missing? And you're the guys who are driving on the road. You need to tell us.
Something needs to be done, does it not? Because, you know, we sit here every Sunday morning, and almost every single Sunday morning there is a story about the problems on the roads of the UAE. I suppose it's an element of frustration. We know that there are those that are working tirelessly towards making the roads a safer place. There is no excuse for bad driving, Georgia Tolley. There is no excuse for that sense of entitlement, that sense of selfishness on the roads. There is no excuse for texting whilst you are on the roads, which I think is, personally, I haven't got the statistics to back it up, but I think that is one of the reasons that's causing a lot of these problems, specifically at red lights, because people are not paying attention at red lights. They're looking at their little screens and then flying into the back of other cars or completely oblivious to what's going on around them. I suppose... The problems are compounded by the fact that the population is spiking so quickly at the moment here. A number of people coming into the UAE wanting to call this home, wanting to pursue their dreams and their visions here. And with that, there is added pressure on the roads.
I think there's also different standards and styles of driving.
Correct.
And it's such a melting pot here. So this weekend we went up to Sharjah to go and see the rain exhibition, which is absolutely incredible. But on the way back, we were driving back at lunchtime and on the Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Road, back from Sharjah to Dubai, which I, you know, talk about on the travel every single day. I was on the road. Goodness me, I don't know what happens when you get to Sharjah as far as the driving is concerned. It's epic. Like, if we think it's bad in Dubai, just a, you know, a few short miles, kilometres up the road, it's bizarre. I had one little minibus cut across my nose. Didn't indicate, just decided he wanted to be in my lane and just cut across my nose. And as he did it, my husband said, you know, he's recently come back from a trip to India. He said in India, it that is the style of that people sort of slightly swerve towards your lane, or this is what he found in Mumbai, that people would swerve towards your lane to indicate that they were about to come into it. And instead of using the indicator.
We don't use lanes in India. That's another story.
And also there's the use of the horns, which is completely different. And of course, you're not really allowed to use your horn in this country.
No.
So as soon as that's taken out of the driver's sort of toolbox of driving techniques, I guess they I guess they sort of, maybe that's one of the reasons why everyone is so bad at driving. But then you get the Westerners in their great big trucks and they think they rule the world and they can gang up on people and loom up behind them with their massive Nissan patrols.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I'm always sort of conscious of the fact that you can't point fingers at one demographic,
one particular driver,
because I think everyone has their faults when it comes to the roads, the UAE. And I suppose the plan is having that cohesive plan of how we get all these different, you know, people who have been taught how to drive in different parts of the world all come together to use one road system.
And also, a lot of countries, their licenses are actually not accepted here in the UAE. So when, for example, countries like India, when you come in from there, even if you've been driving for 20 odd years, you still have to apply for a new license and go through 40 odd lessons of driving classes to learn how the UAE system works. So I don't know if that's a solution. I don't know if that particular, those lessons need to be, people from all countries need to take those lessons. Maybe that's one way of doing it. But maybe people who are so used to driving in a certain way, they just can't change their habits in spite of all those lessons and going through the tests with the RTA.
I was astonished that I was allowed straight on the roads because it is different. You know, even in the UK, you only really have 3-lane motorways on either side. Here you have these massive 10-lane motorways and the road system is different. Quite often you can be coming off in the fast lane or driving into joining the fast lane. You know, there's all these sort of merging sort of roads that I found very difficult to handle at
and
first.
You drive on the opposite side of the road as well. So
yeah, there's that
That's
too.
Something to get used to as well.
You drive on the opposite side of the road? I might explain a few things.
I think, but as much as I'm not here to start making excuses because, you know, there's a population spike because we're seeing more and more roads on the more and more cars on the roads of the UAE. This is a road system that has been designed to deliver. It's designed for convenience and it's designed in a very modern way with no expenses paid. And we're seeing those upgrades at the same time. There is no excuse, however, for running a red light.
No.
Wherever you learn, wherever you learn to drive around the world, there is no excuse to run a red light. And the rising concerns here with regards to the evidence that we're seeing via the CCTV, but equally, 25,000 people ringing in and saying this is an issue. And it's ironic that we're having this conversation then when, just a couple of weeks ago, I was party to a very horrible incident, not far from where we call home here in the UAE, from where we, I like to say live, other people like to say stay, whichever way your semantics at the end of the day, isn't it? But we had an issue where someone was rear-ended, if you like. They were waiting for a red light to change and had that horrible moment. You can imagine that horrible moment when you look up into your the mirror in the car, rear-view mirror, and you see someone hurtling towards you. So they're not going to stop. They haven't seen us, have they? They haven't seen us. And they had this incident, and it was three teachers in the car from one of our children's schools. And they got rear-ended, and all of them are still suffering as a result. One's still in hospital, the others are still receiving treatment. And again, it came from that moment where we can try and be as careful as we like on the roads of the UAE. You can drive as defensively as you like, but it's the action of others that could have an impact on you and your family for the rest of your life.
And one of the problems I see here on the roads at red lights is, when the traffic lights change to yellow, I see people speeding rather than slowing down. And that's an issue with which authorities have recognized. They're actually changing some of the radars in roads across the city in Dubai. And long term, they plan to do it across the UAE, wherein the radars will actually be able to catch motorists who are getting on or trying to cross the red light, the yellow light, because that in itself is wrong. You need to slow down rather than speed up.
I would say that's one of the great things about the roads out here is that, for example, on the Sheikh Zayed Road, you basically can't speed because there's a camera every kilometre, pretty much. And I think that that's a really good device. I mean, if the government doesn't want you to speed, then that's how they do it. And the system is glorious. You know, in the UK, you get a sort of parking ticket or you might get a letter in the post like 3 months after you've done the naughty deed. Here, boom, text message straight away. In fact, my husband gets them if I ever speed.
Same here, yes.
And I get a phone call. Mm-hmm. Very rare, of course.
Thanks for your text messages on this one. A lot of people texting in on 4001. Thanks to Uli saying the driving schools and the instructors need to take more ownership on this one. Thank you for that one. Randall's been in touch. Hey, Randall, good to have you. It's nice to hear that Randall's listening. We might have moved
studios.
But
he's
still there.
Thanks, Randall.
You know, it's those dedicated listeners out there who are sending in their thoughts on 4001. He says education, training and awareness. Adopt an Arrive Alive program. See, I completely welcome that, Randall, and I completely understand that. But I don't go back to my previous point where I was talking about those three teachers who were rear-ended and all of them getting serious injuries, one critical injuries as a result, not of their faults. They'd stopped at a red light at a major intersection before going on to a roundabout. They had stopped. It was the person who was hairing up behind them who didn't stop and cause the problem. So you can drive defensively as much as you like, but until the message gets across, and it hasn't been proven why they didn't stop, but I can get, you know, if I had to make a decision or if I had to make an assumption, it would be a mobile phone, because how often are we out there on the roads, the UAE, and you know the people that are on their phones, you know the people that are checking their screens because you can see them swerving between lanes, slowing right down,
drifting,
speeding quite up. It's just, it's extraordinary, and that's the impact it's having. You can see it happening before it even happens. Thanks also to Marky for being in touch, saying, while talking about driving, you guys, please do let us know if traffic fines and speeds are changing. Again, I suppose this is one, you can keep it locked here on Dubai 103.8. You can keep it locked with the ARN News Centre because they will update you on any of the developments that are brought to us by the RTA, by the authorities as well. I suppose, Tash, though, that one of this rises that question, doesn't it? That we're never quite sure because some roads we see that speeds are being changed and some roads you see that there doesn't seem to be a clear directive across all roads here in the UAE. Things change.
I disagree, Tom. I think, you know, with the authorities here, especially in Dubai, we get notified about speed limits being changed well in advance. You have the signboards going up saying from this day the limit's going to be changed to say 140 to 130 or whatever it might be. So there is enough information out there. It's just about staying across that information. And, you know, we announce it on the news as well. In terms of fines, the UAE came out with a unified system last year. So, and they made it even more stricter when it comes to jumping red lights. So the fine for crossing a red light for light vehicles is 1,000 dirhams, 12 black points, and your vehicle is impounded for 30 days. Maybe it's worth increasing that fine or, you know, increasing the black points. Maybe that will be a deterrent. But that is quite substantial compared to the other fines we have to pay on the roads. And authorities are very, very strict about ensuring that people don't cross red lights. But it continues to happen. As you said, it might be because people are busy on their phones.
One of the pieces of research that's come in recently, which also backs up this story, again, we talk about the problems on the roads, but also we are blessed to have a very modern road system out there. Dubai has been ranked as the second best city for driving, according to a German survey ranked across a range of factors. Dubai came in second on the list of 100 cities worldwide, the only city to better it in terms of the best cities for driving was Dusseldorf in Germany. The survey found that Dubai's level of congestion was 26% with an average speed of 51 kilometres per hour. Dubai also fared well in road traffic injury score, coming in eighth of the list, 9.13 out of 10. Now, that was a survey that was done at the end of last year. What message does that send to drivers across the UAE? Yeah, we know we benefit from a good road system, but that doesn't mean you can take the mickey when it comes to some of the rules and regulations that others abide by. So if they're the top two, who do you think comes bottom of the pile? We'll let you know in just a few moments' time. What's the worst city in the world to drive in? If Dusseldorf and Dubai are ranked as the best cities for driving, which two or which three have ranked the worst? If you know the answer, text it to us on 4001 or equally share your experiences.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Thanks so much indeed for your text messages. Do keep coming in, 4001. Thank you to you, Alison, getting in touch with the show, saying, driving instructors are constantly breaking rules, in my opinion. I was joining on a four-lane highway from a two-lane slip road, and a learner car cut in front of me, then went straight across to the third lane, next to the fast lane. Sat there for no reason at all, not overtaking. Alison continues to say, one of the main causes of accidents I see is people not using the lanes on a roundabout correctly. So often people sit in the outside lane while not exiting the roundabout, and then others go from the inside lane right across to the exit roundabout. I hear your pain there, Alison. Thank you very much indeed for those. Keep them coming in. 4001 if you want to have your say. A lot of people having their say about the state of the roads of the UAE. Rest assured, though, that they are some of the best roads in the world. I mentioned that Dubai ranked number 2, just behind Dusseldorf, in the best cities for driving worldwide. Zurich, Tokyo and Basel rounded up the top 5. They were followed by Singapore, Dortmund, Vienna, Munich and Calgary in Canada. That's the overall top 10. But what about those that didn't fare so well? Who is bottom of the list? Any suggestions?
London.
I'm guessing Cairo and Mumbai.
So Mumbai is right at the bottom of the list.
Oops.
Mumbai is a number 100 out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
London's not in there. Mumbai,
really?
And I feel I'm a bit sorry for Mumbai because they've been pipped to the 100th place by Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. And you'd have a struggle getting around Ulaanbaatar, wouldn't you? Mumbai's a little more, got a few more roads and a few more residents, that's for sure. Then also in those the wrong end of the table, Lagos, Karachi, and Kolkata as well. So if that's something that you agree with, then please do share your thoughts. I want to stick with the roads if we can, please, Tash, because there is one story that is doing the rounds today. It's of huge interest to us here regionally, but it's also an international story. And I was struck by the number, not just of media sources here in the region, but international sources that are following this one live today and have been since midnight.
Yes, and this is the fact that women in Saudi Arabia can legally get behind the wheel after a decades-old driving ban was lifted at midnight. So at midnight, women drove down a main road in the eastern city of Khobar as police cheered on. And the first licenses were issued earlier this month after the ban was lifted by King Salman last September.
It's a huge... It's a huge story in so many different ways. And I suppose that's what struck me this morning when, you know, it makes sense that ARN News Centre and my news team are following up on it. But when you see, you know, Sky News International having live reporters on the streets of Saudi Arabia today, getting the thoughts of the authorities, getting the thoughts of others in and around, it makes for fascinating viewing.
Absolutely. I mean, it was the only country left in the world where women could not drive and families had to hire private chauffeurs for female relatives. And now, by 2020, they're expecting over 3 million women to drive. And that's phenomenal. And, you know, for years, many groups in the kingdom have campaigned for women to be allowed to drive. And it's finally happening. It started at midnight, and today you will see women driving on the roads of Saudi Arabia.
It is making for, obviously... a story that is creating and generating a huge amount. It's also trending online at the moment, isn't it? Because we're getting people using the hashtags over there. And what I've loved about some of the feeds, and I was keeping up to date with the national newspaper, had a live feed a little earlier on. They said the hashtag Saudi women driving is trending, not just in the kingdom, but around the world at the moment.
Yeah, it's
and the number
globally.
Of male motorists who are stopping to proffer their support to female drivers and women drivers there is, I think, very, very notable.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, the groundswell of support towards women having this freedom has just been huge. And the economic implications are going to be massive. Hmm. Women are going to be able to take jobs that they were never normally able to take. For example, if you couldn't afford a driver, you couldn't get to work in the morning. And of course, drivers are more expensive in rush hour. Women who had to travel with their jobs will now find it much easier, you know, as in they'll be able to go from, you know, Jeddah to Riyadh, whereas in the past they wouldn't be able to drive themselves any distance at all. And this is one of the reasons why the Crown Prince has introduced this policy, because the country needs to grow. And with oil prices not as high as they used to, the country needs to grow its economy, needs to diversify its economy. And if you've got 50% of your population unable to get to work easily, then you're never going to have, you know, you're just not harnessing the opportunity that the country has. And so it is, and already we're seeing amazing business implications. You've got car companies like lining up to create cars for women and sort of market them to women.
Yeah, it is The Agenda with you through until midday this morning. My name's Tom Urquhart. Get in touch with the show. Drop us a text message now on 4001 or give us a call on 04871 5500. It is your mid-morning phone in here on Dubai i103.8, broadcasting from Dubai Media City and encouraging you to have your say on some of the big stories of the day. We've got the Air Red News Centre here in situ. Myself, Georgia, Natasha, working through some of the big stories of the day and asking you to get involved as well. So please do send your thoughts. Going to continue with the line on the change to the rules and the regulations in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, where from midnight last night, women have been allowed to drive in the kingdom for the first time in many, many years. So we'll get more reaction on that one as it comes in. But as I said, if you'd like to have your say, do so by texting us on 4001 with your thoughts.
Join the conversation, The Agenda, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Right, we're going to get back to the Saudi story in just a few moments' time. Just let me look at a few of the screens that are doing the rounds here in the studio. And we're seeing a number of news sources picking up on that particular story. However, I just want to go back to one of the stories that's been making a lot of news here in the region. A lot of text messages coming in from a number of you out there with regards to the state of play on the roads of the UAE. This one's come from Fatima, who got in touch with us, saying, interesting. As one of the things I've learned at driving school here was to not slow down when the light is turning yellow, as you might cause an accident and cause the ones behind you might try to pass before the light turns red. I'm not saying I do it, that I'm saying that's what they teach to the students. Again, goes back to that point, doesn't it, Natasha, that we were trying to make a little earlier on about the fact that there seems to be a confusion with regards to what we're taught.
Yes, and authorities have actually made it very clear that you're actually supposed to slow down. There are new radars being installed on roads across Dubai in particular, which will actually be able to catch motorists who try to speed at these yellow lights. So you're actually supposed to slow down and not speed. And it's unfortunate that driving instructors, at least the driving instructor Fatima went to, taught her to speed up.
A couple of other comments that came through on the topic. This one from Laurent saying, good topic today, guys. How about those dark window tintings which prevent you from guessing other drivers' intentions or communicating with them near you? It creates a part of the madness. Thank you for that one, Laurent. We had another one saying, make insurance based on monthly payments. Link monthly insurance to current fine status. Example, if you get a speeding ticket, then insurance goes higher as you have more chance to have an accident.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
It'll be a great idea. Christian's texted in, I've been to all four of the top five cities in this survey. That's the survey that you were mentioning earlier about the best roads in the world. And I currently live in Dubai. That's what Christian says. Did it include the city's delivery trucks or motorcyclists and taxi drivers and people who think they own the roads?
Let's continue your thoughts on all things roads of the UAE. Some good news for a number of road users out there. So the two major Dubai road improvement projects are nearing completion. First phase is of the 7th interchange on Sheikh Zayed Road, and the Al Yalayas Road improvement projects will be ready by September, we're told. That's according to an update from the RTA a little earlier on today. But talking of the roads, and none more so than the roads of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which are the focus of the world's media this morning. Why? At midnight last night, women across Saudi Arabia were legally allowed to drive for the first time since 1957. Tash and her team have been monitoring this story overnight and throughout the morning as well, as it garners huge support the world over.
Yeah, and this is phenomenal, the fact that they have already issued licenses to 2,000 women who are probably on the roads today, because this is day one. And it's the whole lifting of the driving ban is part of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's program to modernize some aspects of Saudi society. He has spearheaded the Vision 2030 program to diversify the economy away from oil and open up Saudi society. And getting this workforce on the roads, getting them to be independent, is obviously going to be a big, big part of that.
As you mentioned, Georgia, I mean, on the one hand, it is wonderful news for women drivers in Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. but equally, economically, it opens up all sorts of opportunities.
Oh, it really does. I mean, obviously, it's a fantastic opportunity for women to get to work. But then you've also got all the sort of different sort of marketing and products that can be marketed towards women. So they can choose their own cars now. Mm. Mm. So obviously, there's this massive, they did a car show about 3 months ago in Saudi Arabia, where it was specifically targeting women drivers. And then you've got Uber, who are getting involved, because obviously, women are going to be allowed to be taxi drivers now. And obviously, women traveling alone potentially might want to choose, just like we have the pink taxi drivers here. I mean, there's just so many different things. You know, driving gloves, maybe. I mean, there's going to be driving outwards, driving shoes. Do you remember driving shoes? I have to take my heels off and drive barefoot when I drive, because you can't do it in heels. But there's going to have to be all sorts of messages, you know, campaigns from the government of teaching women how to drive in a certain way. And I bet I can't wait for men to say, oh, the traffic's got worse in Saudi.
No,
ever since
we go,
women
right,
were allowed on the roads, traffic's got worse.
This is an interesting one, though. This is Al Jazeera Vehicles Agency. They're the distributor for Ford in the kingdom. Maram Al-Hazza is the manager of the Customer Connection Centre. Say they've made some big changes to their showrooms to accommodate the expansion in the drivers across the nation.
We like enter some ladies in the branch, that we make it more comfortable for any lady to come to us, and she can try the car she want. After that, after 10:10, she can, if she want to test drive, she can take one of our ladies with her to the test drive. Because of that, we enter our ladies to the showroom. We make it as a family showroom. We put a play area for the kids, that she can, when she want to try the car or she want to see it, she can let their kids in the play area, and to be comfortable to go around and see the cars and know more about the cars you want.
So those were the thoughts of Maram Al-Hazza, of the manager of the Customer Connection Centre for Al Jazeera Vehicles Agencies. If you listened to the Business Breakfast a little earlier here today on Dubai Eye 103.8, you would have heard the Business Breakfast team talking about this story and talking to Uber as well, Georgia.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So Uber's already hard at work looking to recruit female drivers. Basically, on the Business Breakfast, we spoke to the Uber's marketing manager, who's also a Saudi national. She got her driver's license, and she started driving this morning. She's one of those first women that got to drive. She's called Ahud Al-Arifi, and she gave us her reaction to this momentous occasion.
It means a lot. So women driving is definitely going to help the economy a lot. In many ways, but there is an area where people forget about, which is how it's going to get families closer. If you could just see the face on my, what's my dad's reaction yesterday? He was the happiest person in Saudi, just to be next to me and for me to take him a cruise around the city after 12 a.m. My nephew and niece cannot wait for their mom to pick them up from school. So I'm expecting that it's going to get families closer, and it's not just a day to celebrate for women, but as well as it's a day to celebrate for men.
So those were the thoughts of Ahud Al-Arifi giving reaction to that particular story. Talking of that reaction continues. And I'm assuming, Georgia, it's going to continue for quite some time as well, certainly for the next 24 hours.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's going to be, it's crazy. I mean, it's the most extraordinary change. Mm-hmm. And it's hugely liberating for women. And it's a real sign of the massive changes that are taking place in the Saudi kingdom. And it's just a really exciting time to live in the Middle East.
There is going to be a large boost on petrol as well, we understood. A report by Bloomberg, nice timing from Bloomberg on this one, have just released it as well, saying that the end of the driving ban for women will have an impact on petrol consumption across the entire country. That according to the energy minister as well. And if my cars are anything to go by, and this is not me being a male chauvinist or anything like that. No, but there is. Okay, just in terms of just economics of a car, I can guarantee that the one thing I do not buy from gas stations and petrol stations is car air fresheners. But every single time my wife goes into one, now I don't know what she's saying about me or anything like that.
I was going to say, my husband's never bought me a car air freshener. Do you think you should be
every
worried?
Time I get into the car, once the War Office has been driving it, there's one in there.
What, like a magic tree?
No, well, one of those little tins that you open up to make it smell nice.
Oh, I'm not familiar with these.
No?
No, your wife must have a bit of a thing about them. And clearly
the
Natasha
ones, the
has
ones
it
you
too.
Attach to the aircon. No, I don't have one because they used to make me sneeze. So then I stopped using them. But yeah, I'm familiar with this.
So maybe it's me. Maybe I'm just too smelly. And that's the problem. 4 and a 0 and a 0 and a 1.
I know what it is. You have dogs. Do you let them go in the car?
No.
Oh, okay.
Never let them out of the house. That's a joke, all right? Before people start texting in. Let's get to a break.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. On The Agenda with Tom Urquhart. Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Thanks so much indeed to you all for your interaction today. Thanks also for your comments on all of the big stories that we have been getting involved with this morning. And more so than the historic day over in Saudi Arabia, where women are driving for the first time since 1957 in some parts of the country. Let's go now to some of the other stories that are catching our attention. We've got Natasha Thomas in studio with Georgia and myself this morning. Video games. We have seen a huge amount of input into this in recent weeks, not just here in the region, but also globally as well, as more and more bodies are raising concerns and voicing concerns about the levels of addiction that some children are running to when it comes to video games. I think it's been brought very much to the fore by, and this is no play on words, the addiction many children are having to Fortnite at the moment. And it is something that is causing concern, not just for parents, but also for the health authorities and organisations looking to monitor this. I mean, is it a problem in your household, Tash?
No, not at the moment. So my son is almost 5. He's going to turn 5 on Saturday. And we restrict his access to any kind of gaming device. The only time he gets to play on the Xbox is on Fridays, which is once a week. And but I have to say, we use that as a carrot to get him to do things, which is probably not a good parenting technique. And I may be fueling potential addiction in the future. So, you know, things like if he doesn't go to bed on time, we'll say, oh, you're not getting the Xbox this weekend, or we're going to cut down the time you're going to get this weekend. Because I see even as a 5-year-old, he is really, really involved in the game. He really enjoys playing on the Xbox. And the bottom line is video games are potentially addictive.
It's something that is it a concern in our household at the moment? Yes, I suppose it is a concern in our household. I'll give you a little sort of insight into the mad, bad world of Shay Urquhart at the moment, which is, and I've talked about this with Georgia in the past and listeners about, you know, I've got an 11-year-old who's very much into his Fortnite at the moment. His younger sister is 8. She's very keen to get involved as well. But, you know, there is a PG-12 age rating on this game. Having said that, we had how many did we have? We had 15, no, 8. I don't know, I lost count. There are a lot of kids staying over on Thursday. I had about 11 kids staying over on Thursday night.
Oh, my goodness, you let them sleep. That's...
Could we get them off for Fortnite? Could we not? No. They were and it, you know, there's a World Cup going on. You'd think they'd want to sit in front of the football. No. And then on the Friday, all of the lads, all of my son and his mates went to a Fortnite party, which was somebody's birthday party where they played Fortnite. On the Thursday evening before they had the sleepover, they had their graduation ceremony. So they're graduating from junior school up into senior school. They all got together in a big hall, and you know, there was pop and there was jelly and there was all the things you should have for a graduation party, and they just played Fortnite all night.
What, I mean, what is this game? I know nothing about it.
Fortnite is this new gaming sensation, which has taken the gaming world by storm, which is basically a sort of tame down, shoot 'em up. Well, was there ever a tame down, shoot 'em up scenario? There's probably not. But it really has caught the imagination. You play in teams as well. So you're on wireless with all your mates and you're telling them to watch their back. And then if they get injured, you go and help them and you give them medicine and bits and pieces. It's been a huge, huge hit. It seems to have really sort of cornered the market at the moment. The only add-on I would give is that my son also got quite ill over the weekend, Started complaining about headaches and got very sinusy and wasn't seeing properly, etc. And we did have this discussion this morning, the War Office and I, that, you know, she said, you know what, I think it is the fact that he's playing too much on this game.
Mm. Really? Gosh, that's a huge deal. And how many hours is he spending on it then?
23.
does he go, when he goes to bed and it's lights out, does he secretly go back and play?
Oh, no, no, not at all. No. But to be fair, he has recognised it, and he tries to limit himself to 2 hours a day, which sounds a lot, but probably isn't. And if it is, you know, if these headaches are a symptom of the fact that he's just been playing too much, and why wouldn't it be? It's a tiny little screen. He plays on his phone, tiny little screen, and you constantly see him with his neck craned down like that as well. So you can imagine the sort of pressure it's putting on.
You know, what I was thinking about us when we were teenagers, we used to be addicted to, I guess, in some respect.
TV.
To TV or even video games when they first came out. I remember
Donkey Kong.
Mario. Tetris. I mean, obviously those are basic games, but big for us back in the day. And my brother and I, we used to play for hours on end because our parents would be at work. And so as soon as we'd come back from school, we would just play the video games till our parents would come back home.
Oh, you got away with, you got away with murder because of it. I'm such a Luddite. I really hate video games. I really hate people playing them, and I try and ban my son from playing with them.
Did you not play any video games?
No. And my husband was allowed to, and so we really differ on this. It's a cause of slight controversy in our household.
No, but what I'm trying to say is I think I turned out fine, so I...
So you don't feel the urge to jump on mushrooms?
No, not at all. So maybe it's just a phase, you know, the teenage years. Children do that as long as they're not locked away in a room and just doing it all alone all through the night. If they're doing it in a social environment, as you just described, Tom, with friends, I don't see a problem.
I will monitor this case, all right, and I will report back, and we'll use him.
Yes.
We'll use him as a crash test dummy, okay, for the ARN News Centre. I will monitor his progress and see if the health gets better or not. But, Tash, I've got to say goodbye to you now. I know you got your work cut out today with you and the rest of the team. I really appreciate you coming in and joining us on our first show broadcasting from these new studios. The new studios we share with you. You are only a press release away from us over there as well. So thanks very much indeed for your time. Just a quick reminder for anyone out there that wants to find out more from you, from the rest of the ARN News Centre. Best way for them to interact is?
Download the ARN News Centre app, or you can also go on our website, arnnewscentre.ae.
Much appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
For joining us here on the show. Thanks to all of you for your comments as well. We're not stopping, worry not. We're just turning our attention to the world of sport. Why? Because there is so much going on and so much to look forward to for sports fans today. Chris McCarty will be live in studio in just a few moments' time with his wrap on all things FIFA World Cup.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You are listening to Dubai Eye 103.8, broadcasting live from Dubai Media City. Thanks very much indeed to Natasha and all the team from the ARN News Centre for joining us live in the first hour and a half of the show. Georgia Tolley still alongside me at the moment as well. Georgia, the question I need to ask you now is, have you, because I know you were expressing a little bit of concern about the fact that you hadn't been bitten by the World Cup bug in the first couple of weeks, but after a thrilling weekend, have you?
No. In fact, you looked astonished at me where I said, so did you watch the football? And you had this expression of did I breathe over the weekend?
It's just extraordinary. Anyway, it is time now for us to turn our attention to all things World Cup. It's time for us to turn our attention to the sports team as we get the latest from them.
Bringing you all the action on and off the pitch. The 2018 World Cup in association with Bridgewater Tavern. The only place to watch your team this summer.
It's been a thrilling weekend of action. It's been a thrilling tournament of action thus far. And it continues to pace over the weekend.
That is another delightful finish from Romelu Lukaku. Hazard is onside here and had to score. It's Hernandez who scores his 50th for Mexico. He's done it! Oh, they're driving in! In! There's
response. An inspirational moment. They find a way to win.
Late drama apprentice, Chris McCarty is your head of sport here at Dubai i103.8. He joins us live in the studio. We talked late drama last week. It just doesn't end, does it?
It does not end. A very good morning, Tom. Very good afternoon to our listeners as well this morning. And yeah, it doesn't end. I was up late last night watching it all unfold on Germany. The lucky so-and-sos getting a 95th minute winner. Their World Cup dream lives on. And who would bet against them now going all the way and becoming the first nation since Brazil, 58-62, to go back-to-back in a World Cup?
Let's just remind ourselves of that moment that kept German hopes alive.
Kroos will go for it and score! But an inspirational moment from Toni Kroos!
Did they get it right from the offset? I mean, leaving it to the 95th is leaving it a little bit late, something that us England fans know all too well about. But were there moments of you watching that game when you thought, this ain't right, Germany don't look good?
It isn't right, it isn't at all.
Oh, it's still not right?
It isn't, Tom. I don't think this will paper over the crack. Well, it might. Listen, confidence is a big thing in any sport, let alone of World Cup and tournament football. But reading all the reports yesterday, we heard reports that there was a split camp, that all was not well in the German national team. And for 94 minutes, Tom, they weren't great at all. They were struggling once again. Sweden took the lead, and deservedly so. They should have had a penalty moments before that. Marcus Berg, who plays his club football over here for Al Ain in the United Arab Emirates, he went down under a challenge from Jerome Boateng. I was up off my sofa screaming at the television, give a penalty. The referee waved play on. Sweden then took the lead. Germany equalised early in that second half. They huffed and puffed a little. They were then reduced to 10 men, Tom. Jerome Boateng sent off, becoming, I think, just the seventh German player in World Cup history to be sent off. At that point, I thought, well, it's going to end in a 1-1 draw. Germany will be heading out because, of course, Mexico and Sweden could get away with just a draw in that final game. But as it was, Toni Kroos, excellent all season long for Real Madrid. A free kick wide on the left-hand side, bent one past the keeper Olsen. Germany live on, a 2-1 victory, and they now go into their final group game against South Korea. Victory there, and they are secure of a spot in the last 16.
Joachim Löw rang some changes in the lead-up to that, a number of changes. Seemed to go, or seemed to favour more youth, more than the more established, experienced players. I suppose that sort of then feeds into, and I was looking at a couple of the faces on the Germany bench, you know, you like your Mesut Ozil and Sami Khedira down there as well, didn't look exactly happy about the fact that they were sitting there letting their understudies do the business.
Absolutely, Tom. There is something not right, and you're right to say Mesut Ozil dropped for the first time in a major tournament by Joachim Löw since 2008. Mm. Sami Khedira also left on the bench. And what I found interesting, when the chips were down, when Germany were struggling, he looked to other individuals on his bench. Sebastian Rudi, the midfielder, he was forced off in that first half. Who was it that came on? It wasn't Sami Khedira, it was Ilkay Gundogan. Mm. And in chasing that game, it wasn't Mesut Ozil who can pick a lock, it was Julian Brandt that he looked to, the young Bayer Leverkusen winger. So that suggests to me that all is still not well. That being said, Germany, the German nation, celebrating and smiling this morning because their World Cup dream lives on. And I expect them to beat South Korea and then to the last 16 of a World Cup. Anything can happen. Mm.
No, you're quite right. That group, though, is fascinating. It is wide open at the moment. So much to look forward to in that particular group. Just a quick one as well, because credit to Sweden. I mean, I know they lined up with, you know, look at those percentages in the first half, things like that, with regards to possession and everything. We know they're a good defensive side. We know they're solid. We know we're going to get that. Probably a little harshly done by as well in that first half with the penalty shout, which begs the question, because Boateng finally went off with a red card as well. But why didn't pick up anything for that particular challenge remains to be unseen.
Referee wave play on, Tom. It was ridiculous, so it was. And again, Malcolm asked me the question on Business Breakfast this morning about the use of VAR. And again, it's decision by committee. The referee didn't think it was a penalty. Upstairs in the VAR control room, those four men clearly didn't think it was a penalty. Yet everyone I spoke to this morning said, oof, that was harsh. That was 50-50. That could have easily been a penalty. I thought it was. And watching it in the replay, I'm even more convinced that it was a penalty. Jerome Boateng steps across Marcus Berg, he tumbles to the deck. It's a penalty. It would have been taking a brave decision from the referee to point to the spot. Mm. Because, of course, if he does that, Tom, then Jerome Boateng, as the last man, he's got to go as well.
Got to go, isn't he? Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it is Germany. Congratulations to the last gasp winner for them. Injury time winner pulls Germany back from the brink. Wasn't the case for Mexico. They impressed over South Korea.
And yet another impressive victory from Mexico. They are a little bit of a dark horse. They have got 6 points in this group. They take on Sweden. They know that only a point will secure them not only qualification, but top spot in that group as well, Tom. So Sweden have got it all to do. They can't afford now to sit back and look to hit teams on the counter-attack. They've got to force the issue a little bit more against Mexico in that final group game of that particular group. So looking forward to that one. But yeah, fine victory for Mexico. Once again, Irving Lozano shining. Mm. And Javier Hernandez as well, the West Ham striker, a 50th international goal for him in 102 caps. So congratulations, a 2-1 victory. What a goal as well from Sun Heung-min, the South Korean. Yeah, yeah. Albeit it was a consolation late on in that one. But what a finish. A left foot curler from about 25 yards. So South Korea basically out now. I don't see them qualifying. And for Mexico, well, again, they march on.
I must just credit the Mexican fans. You know, I was doing up the grill up at Barasti last night. You know, I got that at 3. I have never seen that place so busy. I mean, you and I do it quite regularly. You know where we park and we've got the multi-story. I had to go all the way to the tennis court up the top. There was about a 20-minute wait to get into parking, things like that. I couldn't understand what was going on. Thought there must be a birthday party or whatever. I got in there and absolutely rammed. Credit to the Mexicans as well. They were there in number, faces painted, the flags were out and bits and pieces. In fact, credit to all the nations that were playing yesterday, because there was representation for all. And I suppose that's part of the beauty of the World Cup.
Exactly that, Tom. And again, 4 years ago, I was very unlucky, as the case may be. I was fortunate that I was working, but I was unlucky in the sense I was in a glassless, windowless room working on this World Cup, and I didn't get to sample what was the atmosphere around town. This year I have. And one thing that has struck me, such a melting pot. We know Dubai and the UAE is, but there's so many different nations. I've seen Peruvian fans. I've seen a glut of Iceland fans. The country of Iceland is only 330,000, for goodness sake, Tom. And I've seen about 100 of them down at Barasti over the course of the past week or so. It is fantastic. It's a footballing carnival. And thankfully, touch wood, it's all passed without incident over there in Russia. What we're talking about is the football and not what's gone on out of it.
Mm.
Well, and that's good.
Give it a rest, because England play a bit later on, so who knows what's going to happen.
Let's be careful.
Just one other game to pick up on from yesterday. I picked them in a sweepstake with the family group and things like that, and I'm happy with them as well. Belgium, I think they've looked impressive.
They've looked very good. Five goals, just the five goals. It could have been a lot more. It could have probably been double that had Romelu Lukaku stayed on the field. He scored twice once again. The first player, loved this little stat, first player to score twice back-to-back in World Cup games since Diego Maradona back in 1986. He did it against Belgium. And then he did it against England in that quarter-final, that famous quarter-final. So Romelu Lukaku, two for him. Two goals for Eden Hazard, the Chelsea man. And then Batshuayi coming off the bench to add a fifth for Belgium. A 5-2 win over Tunisia. Eight goals now scored in their two opening matches. Okay, some might say Panama, Tunisia, you'd expect them to win those games. But they're scoring goals for fun. They're playing a brand of football that I think will ask questions of some bigger nations, Tom. And I think Belgium, if you've got them in the sweepstakes, hold on to them. Don't trade that one.
Mm. Some great action over the weekend, some great action to look forward to today as well. Chris and I will hit up that. And, you know, we aren't getting bogged down in all things FIFA World Cup. We are cognizant also of the fact that it is a Sunday and there is loads going on. Be a cricket fan, be a rugby fan, be a rugby league fan, be a golf fan, and, of course, a Formula One fan. There is plenty for you. So we'll try and deal with all of those in the last 15 minutes of the show. You're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. You're listening to The Agenda into the last 15 in just a few.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I've got Chris McCarty with me here in studio as we work through some of the big sports stories of the weekend. We've done what was. Let's have a look ahead to what is. And today, final game in Group G. England against Panama, first kickoff. That's at 4 o'clock this afternoon. It promises to be busy out there on the streets of the UAE.
It does. Sorry, Tom. Yeah, it does. I'm sure it will be busy. I'm sure there'll be an awful lot of people flunking work today, or at least would have been in clocking in at about 6 a.m. so that they can get out for 3:15 this afternoon and get down to a venue near them. And I'm looking forward to this one. England will start as overwhelming favourites. Panama, don't want to say the whipping boys of this group, but we saw what Belgium did to them in their opener, a 3-0 win. If England don't match that, or at least get close to that, then it will be, I guess, a disappointment. A win is a win, though. I guess that's where Gareth Southgate will be coming from. If England can win today, then they move on to 6 points. They're safely into the last 16. And then they've got the small matter of Belgium next Thursday.
Mind games already from Roberto Martinez, saying he's going to rest players for Belgium's game as well. Do you read much into that?
I do a little, I guess, simply because, I mean, Belgium will probably point out that it doesn't really matter whether you win this group or not, and that's no disrespect to Group H, but you look at Group H, you'll play the runner-up. If you win the group, you play the runner-up in Group H. That's from Colombia, Japan, Senegal, and who's the other one in there? Poland. Mm. So it doesn't really matter, really, whether you top this group or not. So from Belgium's perspective, I think, honestly, if England win today, I would probably put my life on England and Belgium drawing in their final game. Both will be happy with that, and both just carry on. It gives them momentum builder. They go into the last 16 unbeaten.
Two other games to look forward to a little later on. So that's your 4 o'clock kickoff. Then we've got Japan against Senegal and Poland against Colombia.
Chris, toss a coin. Toss a coin over those two because it's so difficult to predict. We saw in the opening round of fixtures, Senegal getting one over Poland, Japan beating Colombia. I wouldn't have backed that. Colombia were reduced to 10 men early on in that one. So today, huge match, that 10 o'clock game, Poland against Colombia. The loser of that heads out of the tournament. So expect fireworks in that one for Japan and Senegal. Well, they'll know that victory for either of those nations and they're guaranteed a place in the last 16. So a lot to play for from 7 p.m. this evening. But of course, all eyes on the opening kickoff. I've got to get down to Bridgewater Tavern early. I've told the bosses already because England-Panama kicks off at 4.
It's going to be busy as well. So if you are looking for a venue, make sure you plan in advance. That's for sure. Chris, stay with us because we're going to talk all things other sport in just a few moments' time. But Ellen Farmer has joined us live in the studio ahead of her show, her first live show from these new studios. Good morning to you.
Hello, it smells like new carpet in here.
That's not me, I can promise you.
No, it's probably rather nice cologne, the new carpet smell.
Everything's smelling very new, isn't it?
Oh, it's lovely. It's absolutely gorgeous in here. Loving it. Very excited indeed.
I'm glad you've settled in. And what are you going to entertain us with this morning?
Well, it's our Sunday parenting show, and it's all about keeping the kids busy and the parents sane over the summer. So we'll be doing everything from film recommendations, top TV for kids, podcasts for kids, music for kids, essential reading, and getting out and about in Dubai over the summer, whether you're kind of looking to save some dirhams or looking to have a bit of a treat. So everything to keep everybody busy. It's going to be a really packed show. And as ever, we'd love to hear people's recommendations. You guys may well know things that we don't and vice versa, so do get in touch on the text and the Dubai Messenger app too, please.
Or feel free just to take a leaf out of Tom Urquhart's Bad Dad Parenting manual. I think I'm on about volume 16 now or something.
Brilliant.
Like that. Yeah, just whack him on Fortnite.
Oh, fantastic. What can go wrong?
Have them on a fortnight, you know, until they go to sleep, it's fine. 23 hours, I reckon, you get out of it.
But they might make some friends.
They're good. It's all good.
Oh, brilliant. I did see a story over the weekend, actually, a father who's been slapped with an £800. So what's that? That's about 4,000 dirhams, give or take, yeah. Because the son was racking up over 3 days, racking up all these
skins.
Yeah,
buying the skins.
It's a lot of cash.
4,000 dirhams on Fortnite. Thankfully, I'm 31. I can't get away with playing that for 23 hours. 22 is fine. 23 hours.
Give us 22. So never go watch the football at least, you know. Ellen, thank you very much indeed. More from Mr. Farmer just a few moments' time. She's on just after midday, so stay tuned for that. Right, Chris McCarty, Tom Urquhart, Sports Marathon, getting through. Obviously, there's lots to look forward to in the FIFA World Cup. There's also the French Grand Prix. Who's on pole?
Lewis Hamilton will start on pole. Valtteri Bottas, the second Mercedes. A bit harsh to say the second Mercedes, but Lewis Hamilton is the defending champion. He starts in second. Sebastian Vettel in third. The French Grand Prix, the first time in 10 years as well. So Mercedes celebrating. New engine. They've got new components that they were hoping to roll out 2 weeks ago in Canada. Wasn't to be. They've been able to test for extra reliability. They will hope that that new engine gets them through to the end of this race this afternoon. But it is a Mercedes 1-2. The first time Mercedes have locked out the front row of the grid since the Spanish Grand Prix earlier this year. Lewis Hamilton going into this race a point behind his title rival Sebastian Vettel. He will hope for a rather serene afternoon, a victory for Lewis Hamilton, what will be as well his 75th pole, and he will be back atop the driver standings.
West Indies taking on Sri Lanka in their test match series down in the West Indies at the moment. West Indies 132 for 5 at close yesterday. Rain was ravaging play down there in that test match series, and hopefully there won't be any rain on Manchester today. Hopefully the sunshine is there in force, because England looking for a whitewash in this one-day series.
It would be a whitewash, yes. They beat Australia by 6 wickets in that fourth ODI, so a little modicum of revenge after that Ashes. Not quite a whitewash, but it was a comprehensive victory for Australia down under at the turn of the year. So for England today, go out there, perform as you have been performing, and it will be a 5-0 ODI victory. Sets England up beautifully for that test series with India, which is upcoming.
Paul Casey back in the leaderboards around the world. He's doing very well at the Travelers Championship. He's opened up a strong lead against the pack going into the final round a little later on.
Yeah, Paul Casey coming into a bit more form, hasn't he? A four-shot lead he will have over Henley on 12 under par. Rory McIlroy had a decent week. Anubhan Lahiri as well, the Indian. He's five shots off the lead heading in to today's final round. But Paul Casey, a two-time winner down the road in Abu Dhabi, is Paul Casey coming into a bit of form. That is good news for Thomas Bjorn, the European Ryder Cup captain, because I've no doubt that Paul Casey will be one of his anchors, one of his main men over in Paris in September when the Ryder Cup ticks around. So Paul Casey, four-shot lead heading in to the final round of the Travellers Championship.
Congratulations to England. Rugby league team, that is. They overcame New Zealand in Denver, of all places.
Just odd. Rugby league looking to expand its wings and take itself into the US. It is a good win, that, for England. And I guess it completes a bit of a double England. The rugby union side, this is, getting a little bit of pride restored. A 25-10 victory over South Africa yesterday. Nice to see Danny Cipriani wearing the number 10 shirt and performing very well indeed. A little loose in the opening 40, but that kick, beautiful kick, setting up Johnny May for that late try. Tom, I'm sure you have watched this one. England, okay, they've lost the series, but at least they've stopped the rot. 14 months out from a World Cup, they will come back and they'll look to build on that as they look to get themselves into form for not only the autumn internationals leading into the Six Nations, but most certainly getting into form ahead of next year's World Cup.
Talking of getting into form as well and hitting your straps ahead of Wimbledon, which gets underway very shortly. Novak Djokovic seems to be coming good just at the right time. I mean, it's difficult to class Queens, isn't it? Because it's such a limited field at Queens, but he has made it through to the final.
He certainly has, yes, defeating Jeremy Chardy yesterday, did Novak Djokovic over there in London. He set up that final today. Marin Cilic is the man that will be facing him today. Marin Cilic coming through a very hard-fought semi-final with Australia's Nick Kyrgios, and well, history is on the side of Novak Djokovic. They've met 15 times before, Tom. Novak Djokovic has won 14 of them. So Marin Cilic will hope to use that massive serve of his today to unnerve, I guess, Novak Djokovic. But given the way that Djokovic has performed over the course of the past week, I think Djokovic will start his favourite.
Cheers, chap. It's always great having you in studio. Thanks so much indeed. These are your new homes. Make of them what you will.
I'm not seeing them again until July 16th. We've got the World Cup to get done and dusted down at Bridgewater Tavern. But yes, Robbie and I will be live from these very brand spanking new studios Monday, July 16th.
A big thanks to you for joining us. If people want to stay in touch with you, Robbie, and the rest of the team, and of course Farah the Falcon and all the crew down at Bridgewater Tavern, best way for them to do that?
Stay tuned to Dubai 103.8. You can follow us as well on social media at Dubai iSport. We're up on there. Farah's on there. I think a lot of people are getting bored of Farah.
No, I won't have her. How's she doing? Is she
66%
doing well?
She's currently at
66. That's amazing. That's success. Two-thirds success rate.
Yeah, she's doing all right.
Awesome. Thanks for that one. Thanks to you, George Dolly.
Pleasure.
Enjoyed it. Thanks to you, Shroots, Backer House, for putting this one together. And a big thank you, a quick word of recognition. I don't know if they get enough recognition, but all the engineering and the IT team, I think they've worked tirelessly to get us on air over the last couple of days. I don't think they've had much sleep, but no one feels ever sorry for them.
So Dave, Rick, Safra,
all of them. Big them up. Yeah. Thanks very much indeed to all of you for tuning in. That was the first of our agendas live from our brand new studios. The next one is back with another talker tomorrow from 10, so make sure you join us. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy your FIFA World Cup.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.